about you. You're just an ordinary program.
So are you. One that should have been erased.
Welcome to Franchise Fan Guys for our second episode on Tron. I'm Tom Breifogel, joined with Andy Schmidt and Skid Marr. How about you guys say hi?
Hello, users.
Hi, I'm Skid Marr. 10, print, quote, Tron is awesome, end quote. 20, go to 10. Well, basic joke there.
Fantastic joke.
Three people just lost their shit at that joke.
Yeah. Well done. One of the things I learned doing a little research on this is how many computer languages and software jokes there are, or Easter eggs at the very least, in Tron and Tron Legacy. It's a lot, in case you didn't know. It's a lot.
So Disney was on the fence about creating a sequel. Were you excited about there being a sequel or indifferent about it? Why or why not? Skid?
I think I was intrigued, but not super excited, because it was a movie that I watched probably 100 times as a kid, but it didn't really stick with me as I got older, because the technological breakthroughs sort of faded in their impressiveness over time, and the characters never really stuck with me. So I saw it opening weekend in IMAX in 3D, but I wasn't like, I knew I was going to see it, but I wasn't just like, oh man, this is gonna be so great, that I was not like super pumped.
Oh, I think I was the opposite. Like, I saw that the proof of concept short film they made that they aired at Comic-Con, and like, I was 100% in, because it was a super cool short that showed what I considered to be the potential of Tron. So one thing that you kind of need to know about me is the story worlds and characters that really interest me are the ones that, like, they come out and they don't quite hit, but there's really something there. And I think there's a ton of potential that hasn't been tapped in. Like, I get really excited about stuff like that, because to me, that's a really interesting puzzle to unpack and figure out what is the potential, and then how do you unlock that? And I felt like that trailer that they showed at that Comic-Con, like in like 2008 or 2007, maybe. I mean, I think it was 2008. It seemed to be made by people that saw what I saw. Like, saw the potential for this being this, like, super cool, action-y, also kind of mind-bending, movie film franchise. And so, like, I instantly got pumped. Like, that just, like, yeah. And I was really, really excited. And then I learned that the director hadn't made any other movies before, and I started to get nervous about it. But I was still just really, really excited. And I think a lot of it is because of what Skid said last time about the aesthetic. I've always liked that aesthetic. So, like, I really had very high hopes for Tron Legacy. So, yeah, I was excited. Even though I'm not a big fan of the original, I was much more excited for Legacy than I had any right to be. Do you remember this coming out? I know you said you hadn't watched the original Tron until recently. Did you see this, or were you interested in this at all when it came out, Tom?
No, I saw it in 2011, but when it came out, I was living in a bubble, a tour bus bubble of not paying attention to pop culture at all. I guess besides music, the year of 2010, the first like four months started off making an album, and then we were on tour the entire year until Christmas. So that's not an excuse. I guess it just means like it wasn't on my radar at all that year. And then in 2011. My wife and I were dating, and she had it either on DVD or on iTunes, and we watched it on TV. And I saw it before I saw the original Tron.
Had she seen the original?
No, not until last week.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just going to go ahead and say, I think being a rock star and like traveling as part of a rock band is an excuse, because that sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, perfectly good excuse.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think that's fine. Totally fine.
Maybe even verging on humble bragging.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
I mean, I'm in awe of you right now, and I feel a little nervous talking to you about any of this. Franchise Fan
Guys. So the next question we were going to talk about, seeing it in the theater, and if you saw it in 3D, Skid, you did. Andy, we don't know about you yet, but what was your initial reaction the first time you saw it? And if you saw it then and now rewatching it 11 years later, how do you feel about it with some age?
Okay, so the first time I saw it, where I was working at IDW Publishing, the publisher, Ted, like, took the whole staff to go see it. He was just like, it looks really cool. Let's all just go see this movie. And so we all went and we saw it, I think, opening weekend, not in 3D. And I thought it was cool. I liked it. I had my issues with it as a storyteller, which I think we can get into. But there was a lot that I liked about it. But I didn't love it. Like, I was pleased. So then a friend of mine got a 3D TV when it came out. And I wasn't a big fan of 3D then. I always kind of struggled with it in the movie theaters with putting on the glasses and whatnot. But I was over at his place, you know, and this was like right around when it was coming out originally on Blu-ray and DVD and whatnot. And he got it on 3D, and you know, I kind of wanted to see what that looked like. So we watched it again, this time in 3D on a TV, and it kind of blew my mind because I really enjoyed the 3D on a television much more than I tended to enjoy the 3D on a movie theater. So sort of circumstantially, it kind of wound up doing to a maybe a lesser extent what the original did, which was like, it kind of was this breakthrough for me, because now I really like 3D when I'm able to watch it, you know, in a certain environment. So it kind of cracked open 3D for me, which I never would have thought was possible until the 3D TVs, which I found better than in the movie theater. So it did have this kind of weird sort of thing where then like I thought it was super cool, and I just kind of wanted to watch sequences again and again. I also thought it was cool that and I didn't know this going in, that the 3D only kicks in when they go into the digital world. It's a 2D yeah. movie until then, and I thought that was really cool. And like,
there's a lot of parallels with Wizard of Oz. It's like with the real life kind of characters having mirrors that look like them in the strange new world, and that the, you know, the 3D kicking in, like the color kicks in Wizard of Oz. That's interesting too.
Yeah, I didn't think about that at all. That's a really good point. So I have a 3D setup now in my house because I wound up really liking it a lot. And so this was one of the first 3D movies that I got, and you know, I watched it again recently, and I still have all the story issues that I had with it to begin with, but I still really enjoy it. Again, visually, I think this one is gorgeous. I think it could have done a little bit more visually, which we can talk about if we want. But the music is great. The way that it looks and moves is really good, but. I admit that once they escape, just like in the first one, it downshifts.
Right? Same
it's
thing.
High gear. It's the exact same place in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that frustrates me about Tron Legacy is you had 28 years. Is that what we said? 28 years to figure out what didn't click. Like, you knew it wasn't a massive, this wasn't Star Wars, mm-hmm. right? Like, you knew it didn't click, and you had 28 years to figure it out, and you made the exact same mistakes. Exact same mistakes. And in some cases, even worse. Like, we were talking in the last episode, we were talking about Tron being this cool badass character. It's even worse in Legacy because he's not even like freaking in it. It's terrible. That said, I still like the movie quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got bored at the exact, like, the halfway mark of each movie. And then I liked the ending, but yeah, end of the second act in both, I was really bored. And I think also, I don't know if it is just the characters in the story, but there's so much beautiful detail in Tron Legacy. I almost wish we'd be taken out of there for a little bit so we'd appreciate it again when you get back. Like, there's just so much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be nice to know what's going on up in the world. I think in both installments, it would be nice to touch base back in the real world. And I think you're right. Part of that is to sort of remind you, oh, this is really cool. Because after you're in it for a while, the coolness starts to wear off just visually. One of the places where I was saying, like, visually, I think it could have gone differently is one of the things that the original has that's certainly iconic about it is that it's, you know, it's black, blue, and red, and white. And that's it in there. And they kind of do the same thing, although I think there's maybe a little yellow in Tron Legacy. But I feel like you could have done a lot more with color and, you know, that sort of thing that they really don't do, which I thought was too bad.
Yeah, it is funny watching it this last night, because I only really saw it in the theater and last night. And watching it this time, the opening like act of the movie, I was just like, why didn't I love this movie? Like, this is awesome.
Like, exactly.
You know, it's so propulsive. Yeah. And it's like, and when he gets into the computer world, into the grid, it's just like, this is cool as shit. This is so cool. And it, yeah, the exact same thing happens. It's just like you get to that point in the movie and it's just like, it's just a slog from that point until the very end. It's crazy.
Computers are just machines. They can't think.
Some programs will be thinking soon.
Won't that be grand? Computers and the programs will start thinking and the people will stop.
Despite the big box office returns on Tron Legacy, it also seemed to fall short in capturing audiences' hearts and minds. What did it get right, and what are some other things it got wrong in comparison to the first film?
We obviously were segueing in that direction anyway, but
yeah.
I think the key thing that it just didn't figure out where the first Tron went. And Skid, I think you said this last episode, like, that the filmmakers of Tron Legacy assumed that we all loved Tron.
Yeah,
you said something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
And maybe they did. If they did, that was the wrong assumption. Because I'm like sort of that perfect case. Like what I was saying earlier, like I knew I wasn't a big Tron fan, but I was like pumped about this movie. Like I really was looking forward to this. And I came out going, oh, you didn't learn anything from the first one. Like the cool stuff from the first one, you managed not to screw up. That's good. Step one. Like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you didn't give me compelling characters again, and you didn't give me, you didn't give me the heightened action that I wanted and adventure that I wanted. You gave me this, again, very convoluted thing. Like, everybody has a past, and everybody gets a point where they get to sit down and, like, talk about the past. And they just talk about it, and it slows everything down. Like, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's awful. It's not awful. Like, I don't hate it. Like, it's just awful that they couldn't overcome the same hurdles. Like,
yeah.
If this had stumbled on different hurdles, I'd be more excited about it. Like, even if it had still stumbled, it had just stumbled on different hurdles than the first one.
Yeah. No, it's way more disappointing that they made the same mistake again, for sure.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, and there's stuff like, so there's all the background between Sam and Flynn and like what happened. And there's like this. So it's pretty clear that, like, it seems to me that what happened was they wrote the movie and the writers thought that Flynn had created NCOM, and then realized, oh, he didn't create and own NCOM. And so then they create this sort of convoluted way to make him retroactively the owner after the end of the first movie, so that then Sam can be the biggest shareholder, and then the rest of the thing works this way. So there's like that sort of weird convoluted piece at the beginning, which doesn't take a lot of time, but like it's like a lot of like jumping through hoops to get to a place that I don't really know that they needed to get to. Then, you know, then you meet the ISOs, and then it becomes about this ISO thing. But they're already all dead, except for one. And then it sort of becomes about saving Korra. But then this was right, like, I mean, 2010 is sort of, I mean, it's pre, you know, it's certainly pre like the Me Too movement, but you're starting to get, you know, really strong female characters, and I think they didn't decide if they wanted her to be an action hero or not. So they kind of straddle that line, and it kind of makes her, like, sometimes she's badass, like right when she first shows up. But then other times she's this like delicate flower that needs to be protected, and you've got to save her. And like, it makes all the wrong choices, I think, in those regards. You know, then the whole backstory of the ISOs, and like, I don't know what that really has to do with anything. Like, if it's about Sam and his dad, and then it's about the ISOs, and so now there's like this daughter, sort of this like adopted daughter, and then Sam and the adopted digital daughter. There's a point where Flynn says bio digital jazz, man. Like, that's what they're playing. And I feel like this was attempting to be that. Like, all the different people involved were all kind of riffing off stuff. Yeah. And it all hangs together and makes for this cool soup. But that doesn't always make for a cool, well-done story. And so I just feel like it's constantly distracting itself, and distracting audiences. Like, it's really hard to figure out, like, if you try to explain what that movie is about, it's difficult because you've got this ISO, the new life form, and the relationship between the dad and the son, and like, I'm not even sure what the villains are really trying to do. I mean, Clue is trying to build the perfect system, which is sort of grafted onto, you know, Clue from the first one, because that's not, you know, they never sort of say that. And then like, so okay, so Jeff Bridges is the bad guy also, but then that doesn't really go anywhere other than it's for fans of the first one who can go, oh, that's Clue from the first movie. It did not help that the de-aging special effects were not very good.
No.
They had not perfected that technology yet. So that
and they look
helpful.
Worse and worse the further we get from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I have all of these issues I have with it, and I still do really enjoy the movie, but I completely see why this thing did not connect again enough to move the needle. And Skid, you brought up last time, you brought up Tron Uprising, which we should talk about as well. But before we get into that, what did you guys think?
I mean, I think they did get a lot of things right. They made a lot of cool choices. I think that the light cycle stuff from the original is one of the best things of that movie, one of the most iconic things of that movie, and they managed to take it to the next level in a cool way by putting it in adding a third dimension to it, you know, different levels to the playing field.
Yeah, that sequence
pretty
is
neat.
Amazing. I agree.
Really
I
cool.
Love that sequence. Yeah.
Very, very, very cool. Yeah, I think the character design, the world design is great. Most of the, you know, the casting is pretty good. I think they tried to bring a lot of the dude into the character of Flynn, like in this, which was a big joke at the time. It's like, I think that works. You know, I think that's kind of neat. I think one of the things, for me watching it this time, the thing that occurred to me that I would have been fun to try is just the idea of Flynn. I, you know, because you think about, he talks about the way the time works, that it like time passes so much more slowly inside the grid than it does in the real world. So, you know, a few minutes is the equivalent of a few months or whatever in the grid. So Flynn, the character Flynn he's been missing for 30 years. So he's actually been alive in the grid for what feels like to him like hundreds of years, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to have seen them play with the idea of him being this omnipotent sort of deity that's sort of given up on his world, that's been sort of disaffected by it, and become more powerful and strange and detached, like as he's gotten older. And you know, it feels like when they first introduce him, that kind of feels like the way they're going. I really wanted to see almost like kind of a Dr. Manhattan thing out of him, like someone who could affect like real change, but has lost the will to do it. And his son comes back in, and if his son comes back in and, you know, jars him, shakes him out of his trance and turns him back into a force for good, that could have been way cooler, I think, than what we got. That was, obviously that's not the story they're trying to tell, but I think that could have been another way to go that I would have really liked.
There is a lack of conflict, like interpersonal conflict in both of these films. Like Flynn goes in the first one, Sam comes in the second one, and then they like meet people that are clearly villains, and then they meet people that are clearly their friends and helpers, and like they all just kind of get along. And like they pay a little lip service to there being some angst, but then it just goes away. Like they just kind of get over it, you know. And I think that's a real issue because again they just ignore the characters. Like you have characters that have reasons to have conflict, to have points of view, and they all just kind of merge together, and it winds up making them all sort of less memorable. Instead of them all having distinct points of views, and you know, you can not like or have serious issues with somebody that you still have a common goal with, and that tends to make it more interesting.
Yeah. Tom, what'd you think?
Did it bother either of you that even if you are the main shareholder, if you leak the company's biggest asset, wouldn't you still go to jail for a lot more than one night?
I think so. It's like, but I have money. Yeah, I don't know. I don't, like, there are still other shareholders who might be upset. Actually, that was kind of a funny thing. It was like, it's kind of a trope that they used in Dark Knight, which is the business owner robbing his own business, which is something that Bruce Wayne does, like in the beginning of Dark Knight. This happened 2 years earlier, so that was another cool thing. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't. If you look at it more deeply, it really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I loved the heist feeling scene. I wish he would have just gotten away, I guess, because yeah, once he went to jail and then was right out. From then on, I had to be like, oh yeah, this is a Disney movie. Let's not take this too real.
Yeah, the idea of a wealthy man getting away with a crime is just inconceivable.
don't do that, Skid. You know, I can talk politics for decades. That didn't bother me, Tom. But now that you mention it, it will next time I watch it. So thank you for that.
Thank you for ruining
I love
my
ruining
next viewing.
People's afternoons.
You know, but there, you know what's interesting is in the first film, there's that older guy. I think Walter is his name in the film. The guy with the beard who winds up being the
oh bump yeah
that opens up the door later in the digital world.
Yeah,
he is actually one of the founders of NCOM, which he says in the first movie, he's been sort of like sidelined or whatever, but he was like one of the company founders, and I felt like there could have been something interesting to do with him or a character like him, you know, in the sequel. It felt like I got the same movie only with 2010 sensibilities. And, you know, I said earlier that I was nervous because as a first-time director, I thought that was a really impressive film, especially the action sequences. And I have not that long after that, he made a movie with Tom Cruise that also didn't do great at the box office called Oblivion, and I really, really like Oblivion.
Yeah, that was good. I like that.
But yeah, overall, I think it's very weird to really, really like this movie, but also be quite disappointed with it at the same time. But even so, I know that I am more of a Tron fan now than I was before Legacy like came out. So in that regard, Legacy for me personally, and other people's mileage, I'm sure does vary. That for me personally, Tron Legacy did make me more of a Tron fan, but it made me a Tron fan in that way that I was sort of talking about before, where I still see that potential, and I tend to really like things that have that potential because I like to try and figure out how do I unlock that potential and make this something that does connect to a wider audience. Like that's what I love to do. So yeah.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I feel the same way. Like I'm a bigger fan now than I was before, even just after watching it, Tron Legacy the second time. I'm a bigger fan than I was before, even with all the problems I had with it. There's enough cool stuff going on there that I'm a bigger fan.
How about you, Tom?
Well, yeah, I guess I wasn't a fan. I had seen Legacy once in 2011, but it didn't hit nearly as much as this time because I didn't get any of the callbacks when I saw it in 2011 because I had never seen the first. So, yeah, much bigger fan than essentially I had almost forgotten about the movie. So it's not a high bar to reach, but yeah, I am a much bigger fan than I was 2 weeks ago. At this point, I don't know if I would watch the cartoon. But I would definitely see a third Tron movie. What is the Uprising? What's that all about, Tron Uprising?
Skid, you want to hit that?
Yeah, I've watched three episodes of it. I don't remember this ever existing at all. I was not, it never popped up on my radar. But my girlfriend, Samantha, was a huge fan. Like, she loved the show. So I was just like, oh, I was just Googling Tron and this showed up and I asked her about it. It's like, oh yeah, I love that show. So I started watching it and it takes place between the events of the first movie and the events of the second movie. And Tron has been sort of damaged and he can't lead the revolution against the oppressors. So he brings in he enlists the aid of a protege, played by Elijah Wood, by the way, named Beck.
Yeah, to yeah, it's got a really like good
run
cast.
The revolution. The cast is crazy. Box Lightner's in it. Mandy Moore, Lance Henriksen is in it. Yeah, and it's actually the showrunners are two guys from Lost. It's Horowitz and Adam Horowitz and Edward Kitsis.
Yeah, they wrote Legacy. Or they were,
oh, right.
They were two
okay.
of the writers on Legacy. So yeah, they were baked into the whole thing. Yeah.
And they also created Once Upon a Time, I think. They were creators of that. Paul Rubens is in it. Reginald Vell Johnson. It's crazy. So it looks oddly enough kind of like Aeon Flux. It looks like a super slick, incredibly high budget version of Aeon Flux. Yeah, it's I've made two seasons. It feels a little bit Batman Beyond a little bit with like this like aging superhero bringing on a replacement in this like super slick like high tech kind of aesthetic. It's cool. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the series.
One thing when Disney Plus first launched, and I don't know if they've fixed this now. When they first launched, episode one on Disney Plus is actually not the first episode; it's the second episode.
Oh,
and
I did not know that.
And the first episode is like an episode. It's essentially an episode zero, and I think that's why it's not on there. Is there was probably some sort of different agreement because it was like I can't remember exactly how it launched, but like that episode launched online, like on YouTube or wherever else. But it really is part one, and you can watch it. I think it's on YouTube or something, so you can still see it. But it's worth, like, so if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm going to check out Tron Uprising, try and find, like, the sort of the episode zero, if you can. Make sure you got the episode order. Because where you, unless they fixed it on Disney Plus, which I did not check recently, they may have. I may have gotten it up there. But yeah, and it's the animation studio is the same studio that did Transformers Prime, which, which I consulted on sometimes. The animation's incredible.
Incredible.
Won some awards. Yeah,
it's gorgeous. Really it really
it won an Emmy.
It's really
cool
looking animation.
Really, really good.
It's one season was all it got. It didn't get a second season, but it's a long.
Season. I thought there were
like 20. It's like 20 episodes long. Yeah, no, it only got the one, but it's really cool. And it does a lot of the things that and I wasn't thinking about this when I mentioned this, but when I was talking about how like the world doesn't feel fleshed out, I think you said it was shallow, Skid. Mm-hmm. This show introduces us to normal programs and what is sort of life like. I mean, it doesn't do it to such a degree that like I feel like I could walk around whatever city they're in or whatever. But you know, Beck, the main character, he's not a program like designed specifically to deal with, you know, these issues, and you meet these other characters, and there are some more interpersonal problems. I mean, the main cast of characters are all friends, but then, you know, they have their issues. And so in some ways The action is cool in it too. You know, in some ways, Uprising is kind of the best of the bunch of the other things, I think. It does not have the scale or the scope that the films do. Like they're like the show doesn't attempt to change the world, and I think that's, you know, partially because it takes place in between one and two, and so, you know, they can't defeat Clue, right? Because that doesn't happen until the movie that comes after it. So their hands are a little bit tied there, but, you know, in the times when it's a character piece, I think it works really well. And again, the action sequences are cool and the animation's amazing. So yeah. And actually, yeah. I have that. I listened to that soundtrack too, the Tron Uprising soundtrack. I listened to that for certain projects.
Also, very good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
And so also, the same dude who orchestrated Daft Punk is the guy who scored that one, which that makes sense.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So if you're listening to these and you're like, I need more Tron, that's the Tron to go get.
Also, real quick, speaking of TV that was inspired by Tron, one of the big franchises that Tron sparked, at least for me, that was a huge fan of when I was a kid, was the TV show Automan. Andy, do you remember that show?
Yes. Yes.
It was a computer. It's a computer generated guy who was like, he was written to be like a crime fighting like a software, but he like came alive and like was a superhero. It looked really cool. I love the show. Desi Arnaz Jr. is in it, but it was very expensive. And one of the reasons that it only got like half a season was because it was in a very difficult time slot on Monday nights on ABC. It was up against Bloopers and Practical Jokes with Dick Clark and Ed McMahon on NBC.
That's tough.
And Scarecrow and Mrs. King on CBS starring Bruce Blocksliner.
So. Yeah, in my house we were watching Scarecrow and Mrs. King, but then
exactly.
But somehow we did manage to watch Automan. If I remember correctly, Automan himself kind of looked like he was lit with the blue. He looked like a Tron character.
Oh, right? Absolutely, 100%. Yes.
And then he had the cursor that floated around like Bit. The cursor with Clue, like Bit.
Right.
But it could turn into, it could just like create stuff. So it could create a, I remember it created a car a lot.
A Lamborghini. Yeah, no, created like a cool car. Lamborghini. Yes. Yeah.
I think it created other things too, but I don't remember.
Yeah, like a helicopter. It could really do anything. It was cool. As a kid, it was the best thing ever.
Yeah. No, I remember Automan.
I just looked it up. It looks just like Tron.
I know, yeah. Right? I know. It's
there,
awesome.
There were several shows like right in that era that like if they had come out today with today's effects and budgets, like I think they would have been they would have done great. Like Manimal was another one.
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
Manimal
yeah.
was amazing. And then there was another one too. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was just called Phoenix. I'm not sure, but it starred the lieutenant, like Khan's lieutenant in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah,
this,
yeah, yeah,
as
yeah.
As this, like, alien with superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so wow. glad we're talking about this.
Me too.
But, yeah, there's, like, wow. there's a bunch of those things. And, like, you think of, like, I look back at those shows and I go, yeah, if those came out now with today's, with how popular superheroes and all that stuff is now, I think those could have and would have found some, you know, a longer life. But, you know, that was back when liking comics and superheroes just made you a nerd and a dork.
Yeah, like, you had to be ashamed if you liked a show like that, even if it were good. Theoretically.
Right. Yeah.
And there were only three outlets for the show, right. A show to be created. So like that was it. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Franchise Fan Guys. Tron, episode 2 of 3. Please write a review and give a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Intro music by Tom Breifogel and John Harvey. To connect, visit FranchiseFanGuys.com, at FranchiseFanGuys on Instagram, and at GuysFranchise on Twitter.
Bye!
Franchise Fan Guys.